This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You'd be an idiot not to pick that Wisconsin to win this game. Give me that cheese head.
Get the crazy.
Oh! It's Nebraska! And an upset! Go to Nebraska! Wow. Nebraska! Hey, two men! Nebraska! And an upset!
One of college football's most beloved broadcasters, Lee Corso, is going to be calling it a career later this year. That news was announced today. We're taping Thursday, and this is the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SNW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's just get straight to it. The news of the day in sports media, Lee Corso, the 89-year-old ESPN college game day analyst, is going to be doing the show one last time in week one of the coming season. And then that will be it for one of the great, colorful careers in the history of sports broadcasting. Somebody who Brian Curtis had posted this on one of the social media sites today. Someone who modeled his career after Dick Vitale, and in many ways, very reminiscent of Dick Vitale. Every single week on College Game Day, the headgear pick. But beyond that, just the general energy, the not so fast, my friend, the chemistry that he had and still has with Kirk Herbstreit. And for so many years, it was just Fowler, Herbstreit, and Corso holding that show down. And it's a lot like Inside the NBA, where Inside the NBA is still a great show. But if you remember when it was only Ernie, Kenny, and Charles, you know when the show was at its very best. And when it was Fowler, Corso, and Herbstreit, it was at its very best College Game Day. So Lee Corso, obviously, we know he has had his health issues over the years. And people have made a lot of hay about his difficulty speaking at times. To me, all the times you would see someone say on social media, oh, ESPN, let this guy rest. You know, having game day to do every week, having that challenge, you know, I can only imagine how exhausting it is to do game day for Reese Davis. It's probably exhausting for Pat McAfee. And so it's work, it's hard work. And to be able to go through that every single week, some people might view that as they like to say on social media, elder abuse. I think it's more like purpose and drive and something to look forward to and a challenge at a time in life where you really need as many of those positive challenges as you can possibly get. And for him to fight his way back from the stroke that he had, for him to still be able to communicate as well as he did, and as well as he does. I hope that Lee gets some plaudits for how he's handled the latter stage of his career, because his prime was great. But I truly believe that the latter stage of his career, for as much criticism as he might have gotten on social media, deserves some praise as well. And Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There was a time when you got College Game Day on Saturday with Fowler, Corso, and Herbstreit, and you got NFL primetime on Sunday with Berman and Jackson. And you're talking about the two, in my opinion, the two greatest sports-specific shows ESPN has ever done. And College Game Day, for as popular as it is now, it will never be as good as it was when it was just Fowler, Herbstreit, and Corso. I'm talking about pre-guest pickers. when Corso was at his sharpest and Herb Street was the young guy on the block, that show was fantastic. Lee Corso got it, though, John. He got it. Lee Corso realized that as a broadcaster, you could make comments that were clear, convincing, and you could have all this charisma without being a clown. And he nailed, Lee Corso nailed the transition from merely being an analyst to becoming a broadcaster and an entertainer. And it's something you don't see anymore. He is one of the last people in sports who are true showmen. You think about Musburger. You think about Bill Raftery. You think about Corso. You think about Vitale. This is a group of men, a generation of broadcasters who are entertainers and showmen. They understand the showbiz element of what you can do on television. And he got it and he nailed it. And he was also a really good analyst. He really was. When he did games with Tirico and Herb Street on Thursday nights, he was good. And I bet you Kirk Herb Street is not as good a game analyst as he is now if he's not working with Corso more than 20 years ago doing those games on Thursday nights. I want to make a point about Lee Corso, John. So Regis Philbin was a beloved television host, hosted everything. Let me tell you how much charm and charisma Regis Philbin had. He's hosting Who Wants to Be a Millionaire one day, and he's reading the questions, and everybody knows that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was this remarkably popular show, but it was not quite to the level in terms of the toughness of questions as Jeopardy. So Regis is reading the question, and he cannot say Pythagoras. He reads the question, and he stumbles repeatedly, and the contestant actually has to say Pythagoras for him because Regis keeps saying Pythagoras. And it was funny. And you would think Regis should know better than that, but it did not matter because he was so beloved that even his mistakes we could overlook because of his charm and his charisma and his likability. Lee Corso reminds me of Regis in a lot of ways. And I love the way that over the years, Kirk would lean in to make sure he hung on to every word Lee Corso had to say. In those, as Lee has, you know, had his health challenges and everything, I love the way Kirk has respected him and honored him and just leans in whenever Lee speaks. It's really touching to me. And I even think about how when Kirk lost his dog, how just you could see the compassion Lee had for Kirk. It's really one of the great television combos, if you think about it. Lee and Kirk Herbstreit is who he is now, in large part because of the presence of Lee Corso. Lee Corso was a man who mastered television. He mastered sports television and became a showman and entertainer without becoming a clown. And that's what people need to know about Lee Corso. Forget about post-2009. Go back to the 90s. Go back to the early 2000s. Heck, even go back to the 80s when he was with Tim Brando and Beano Cook was a part of their coverage. Lee Corso was one of the faces of college football, and he should always be remembered as such.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a transition period for College Game Day, obviously. And Lee, you know, leaving the show, even though his role has been diminished in recent years, he's still a huge part of it, right? I mean, you know, the headgear pick still is the closer. There have been multiple weeks he's missed over the in recent years. And, you know, they might end with the guest picker or with McAfee doing something. But the real closer of this show is Corso. And it's strange to say about an 89-year-old, but it's hard to see how Game Day is going to ever be the same without him. It's going to be missing something. You know, you think about the year when he was home because of COVID. Wasn't the same. Well, it wasn't the same show anyway because of COVID, obviously. But, you know, I mean, it's just, it definitely, even to this day, with the diminished role, he is still a huge part of their chemistry, and the show doesn't feel whole when he's not there.
That's very true. And some people might say, well, they don't need Corso anymore because they have Pat McAfee. let me explain the difference between McAfee and Corso. Pat McAfee is far more polarizing than Lee Corso ever was. And there's some venom at times with McAfee that you never get with Lee Corso. You would never get Lee Corso calling Caitlin Clark the B word, even if he meant it, and even if he said it in jest, you would never get that. And so Corso has, it's an old school charm, an old school charisma that the Bob Uechers and the Regis Philbins and these old broadcasters from back in the day had. They knew how to toe the line. They knew how to do the dance, and they could keep things relatively clean, but also be a little bit on the edge and be genuinely funny. And that nobody else will do that on that show. Nobody else can provide that, not even Pat McAfee, because the reality is, as entertaining as Pat McAfee is, it's coarse at times. And with Lee Corso, you did not get that. It felt more gentlemanly. It felt more avuncular. It felt more old school. It felt more red wine versus Pat McAfee's more of a coarse tone at sometimes in Civil, frankly. So that's something you will not get with College Game Day going forward, because Lee Corso's presence is not there.
That's an interesting point you make. Now, full disclosure, we're taping Thursday, but we taped the podcast originally on Wednesday, and we talked about the Masters, and that'll be later in this episode. One of the things that I talk about is kind of the gentility of the Masters, and whatever you think of that gentility, and whether it's fake or whatever, it's just something you don't see a lot of today. And you make, it's such a great point that you just made about Uecker and Corso, and that particular generation where the dirty jokes were on the sly. They weren't so blatant. And, you know, you were kind of the difference between maybe a movie like Airplane and a show like Family Guy, right? Where there was a time where the standards were still high enough that if you were going to say something a little bit out there, you had to be a little bit more skilled and deft with it. And I definitely think that's a big difference between the two of them. Corso, we're talking about someone who is beloved. I had the privilege of sitting in on game day at Florida State back in 2009. And, obviously that's Lee Corso's campus, but I mean, I'm not going to say he's like the Pope or anything, but, you know, he's this older man. He's very gentle. He's very, you know, he's kind of not necessarily like a McAfee might be out there. You know, I would say Corso is a little bit more reserved, at least in private, than a Dick Vitale might be when he's crowd surfing. You know what I mean? And then you go out into the crowd and it brings that out of you a little bit more. He's someone who I definitely think at an interpersonal level probably holds that show together because of how highly they, and Kirk in particular, think of him. But this is a transition period for game day. And, you know, you think about it, it's been two different shows lately. The McAfee show with, you know, Nick Saban there too. And then the original show with Herbstreit and Corso. Now Herbstreit's going to be the last one left. You're not even going to have the guy from Georgia, who David Pollack, you're not even going to have him. It's going to be basically Reese, McAfee, Saban, and Herbstreit. And Desmond Howard. I always forget about Desmond. I'm sorry, Desmond. But, those are all, if you're like me, Desmond is a new guy, right? If you're old enough to remember the show, Desmond Howard is a new guy on it to me. So all the originals are going to be gone. And, it's one thing I will say about Corso and Herbstreit and that original version of the show. It was genuine, just like inside the NBA with Ernie, Kenny, and Chuck before Shaq got there. No one was trying to do anything to trend on social media. There was no social media. Yes, you knew people were watching. You knew people loved it. Obviously, the crowds made that obvious. But everything that was happening because they felt like it should be happening. With McAfee, you kind of get the sense he, you know, I mean, he wants to trend. He wants to, you know, it's social media, it's a new era. And I'm not even criticizing McAfee when I say that, you know, I mean, it's just the nature of the way things are. And the era where, you know, you kind of had things grow organically, probably not possible for the time being.
I'll say this. With what you said, Corso's style of broadcasting, the Raftery's, the Vitel's, that style, that showman style, without the craft, the coarseness, I think we're losing it, and I don't think people realize how much we're losing it. I think an absence of a Corso is really gonna highlight how much that will be missed. And let's make this clear. And nothing we've said is a knock against Pat McAfee. My goodness, he's making millions of dollars from ESPN for a reason. He brings great value to that show. And to be honest, the show had gotten rather stale for a while. Now, it's still not as good as it used to be, but it has a freshness about it and a spontaneity about it that McAfee brings that had been lacking. But the reason it was lacking is because you had a Lee Corso who had been dealing with health challenges. Corso is the spirit of that show. Corso is the soul of College Game Day. And without him, College Game Day will be figuring things out in a different way, and it will never be the same kind of show. That is abundantly clear. And Corso's departure really signals an era that we're losing, an era of those kinds of broadcasters, those showmen, those entertainers. We're losing that. And it's interesting that we're talking about this in the context of Brent Musburger also being selected to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as the Pete Rozelle Award winner. He is also of that generation, but we're losing that. And so it's why I tell people, hold on to Bill Raftery as much as you can, because that style of broadcaster, that generation of broadcaster, we're losing them one by one, and we're not going to get it back.
That's a great comparison, Bill Raftery, who really is the last one standing. And I wish I could figure out a way to articulate exactly what it is, this particular maybe post-war generation growing up in the 50s and 60s when things are a little bit, you know, I mean, stagnant culturally, and kind of finding ways around what is appropriate to still be funny, to still be charming. It was so much harder back then. You know, nobody wants to live in a country with a lot of censorship, obviously. But when it gets to be anything goes, I like to think of it, and I mentioned Airplane and Family Guy before. You know, when it became like the Tosh.0 era and everything was just, let me maximize how offensive I can be. Let me go all the way to the furthest reaches. Comedy was a lot better when you kind of had to, you know, get a few bunts in, rather than swinging for the fences every single time. And I definitely think that's an element with that generation, and we're not getting it back. You can't have that era anymore in the social media time. I mean, think about how extreme everything on social media is. And even if you're not popular with some people, you'll be popular with others. So there's just nothing holding people in check. But I did want to mention, anytime you talk about Lee Corso is a Florida State University grad. And in fact, Florida State hosts Alabama on that final week that he's doing game day. Maybe they'll go there. Maybe they'll go to Ohio State. But we're taping Thursday. And as many of you probably know, there was an active shooter out of the Florida State campus today. I don't really know the extent of what happened. So I do have some connections to FSU. Got a lot of FSU followers on social as well, including Steve Stone, who's in their communications department. Just wanted to obviously offer my, you know, my thoughts. I feel like there's really not much else useful that I could say, but I would not want to say nothing. So I just wanted to get that out as well.
Same here.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano. Or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's HIMS.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, we are going to shift gears now to the original topic that led off this podcast when we recorded it on Wednesday, and that would be the NBA's television ratings, and we'll go to that discussion now. All the hue and cry about the NBA rating situation earlier in the year when the viewership was down about 20%, a lot of things were said about the league. This was a lot of opportunism. People who had problems with the NBA for political reasons or because they don't like the style of play. And ultimately, it really had nothing to do with the reality of the rating situation, which was that the NBA backloaded its schedule. They didn't even have Golden State playing in opening week. And so obviously, if you remember the home stretch of the season, you had games like Lakers-Celtics, Lakers-Mavericks, Lakers-Warriors, all in March and April, when you're usually winding down. Obviously, the Luka trade has helped the league tremendously. But frankly, I mentioned Lakers-Mavericks. If the Luka trade is never made, that's still the Lakers going up against the defending Western Conference champions in the final week of the season. That's not a normal final week of the season matchup for the NBA. So the league pretty clearly backloaded its schedule. Anyone could have told you, in fact, I did. I said it in November. That the concern around the NBA was pretty low because the league expected the schedule to pick up, and it did. So down only 2% from a year ago.
Only 2%. It's not it's not going to get the clicks, and it's not going to get the culture war arguments going the way all that mumbo jumbo back in December and January was. But the facts are the facts. And what I love about it is if you were operating in good faith, you could see this happening. Christmas Day was our sign, because the ratings for the Christmas games basically made up for the gap that existed the first 2 months of the season. And so that should have been a signal to everybody. You know what? Everybody just calm down. Calm down. Let's let this thing play out. Let's let the All-Star break. You have to go by the mile markers, John. John Madden used to always say, football does not start until Thanksgiving. And when it comes to the NBA ratings conversation, you got to hold on until at least February, right? I mean, let's start off the spring. Let's see how things look at the end of the season. And like you said, the NBA had a strategy here to backload some of these big games. And it worked. For all of the noise, for all of the narratives, for all of the NBA is dead stuff, go woke, go broke, all that stuff, here we are with a real number. Data shows us that there was not that much drop off for the NBA this year compared to last. And what the conclusions should be for anyone who's trying to operate in good faith is, you know what? The NBA is doing relatively fine. And that is as unsexy as that is, as many clicks as you'll miss by just telling the truth, that's the reality. And that's kudos to people like you and Austin Karp, who just give people the facts, give people the context, tell people what's really going on, and who are able to block out all of the noise and just let people know this is what is happening. This is what the data is telling us. Even if you don't like it, even if it doesn't fit your narrative, too bad. It's a 2% decrease. That's it.
I mean, look, the reality is it wasn't a great season. It's not a golden age for the NBA viewership-wise. Actually, the least watched season since the COVID-shortened season of 2020-21. But, you know, when you're putting it in the context of sports on TV, NFL was down 2%. NHL's down 13%. College football and college basketball, men's college basketball down high single digits. And obviously women's college basketball, I haven't seen the number, but we all know that was probably down pretty sizably. I will say, 2% across the main three networks, down 5% if you include NBA TV. But still, we're talking about minuscule declines here. Nothing that really is surprising given the state of TV. So we'll see what happens next year. I think the viewership probably is going to go up because of the number of games on broadcast TV, the elimination of games on NBA TV, which isn't official, but I have to assume it's going to happen. And the fact that the least watched games, which will be those Peacock games, I'm sure, probably are not going to be Nielsen rated. So a lot of opportunities for the NBA to get a nice viewership bump coming up.
And a lot of the arguments that we heard back in December, we're not going to hear because it's not going to fit the narrative. Because the reality is, like you said, there's no reason to not expect for the ratings and the viewership numbers to go up next year, because you have all these games on NBC, you have fewer games on cable, more games on broadcast. And as you and I have talked about on this podcast, broadcast television still runs the day. Cable television is not hot. It's not. I rarely watch cable. There's no reason to for me. But ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, you still got me, baby. And so there's something to be said about having your games on broadcast channels where your maximum audiences can watch. That is still a thing in 2025. And I understand everybody's saying television is dying. People don't watch. They're cutting the cord. Whatever you want to say. The reality is, if you leave the games where the most number of people can watch, that's what they're going to do. And comparing where the NBA is now in the television realm versus 23, 24 years ago when David Stern was moving everything to cable. It's a pretty fascinating change. And we even talked about this with Bob Costas when he joined us on the podcast a few weeks ago, that everything is sort of coming back around to broadcast television, and all that trust that was placed in cable is wearing away slowly and surely, and in some cases not so slowly. And we're seeing sort of the reemergence of broadcast television because people are realizing that that is the safest bet.
And look, it's not necessarily that broadcast TV is unaffected by what's happened to TV, but it is so much less vulnerable than cable. And you can just look at the viewership for the NBA. ABC was up 10%. ESPN and TNT were down 7%. Some of that, obviously, ABC had 5 Christmas games this year after 2 last year. The ABC Sunday Showcase and Saturday Primetime were actually down. But ultimately, hey, you know, you go with the numbers you have, and ABC was up 10% for the year. So for the NBA, you look forward to an era on broadcast TV, and for the other leagues, well, you better hope that economy is more resilient than you think, because I would not want to have to be in a situation where the broadcast networks might not necessarily be able to bid as much as certainly we saw in the last deal. You know, if the economy really tanks, it's going to be, you know, cable, obviously, everyone's going to take a hit. But cable needs sports to keep the lights on. You might see cable become a bigger player in these upcoming rights negotiations.
Yeah, when you say that, I can't help but think about the NHL on TNT and how weird a fit that still feels like. I mean, we're just looking down the line a bit. Baseball on TBS, you have to wonder what happens there. Cable's not it, man. And some of these games, they feel like they get lost on specifically TNT and TBS, these baseball and these hockey contests. They feel like they get lost, man. They really do. And going back to the Four Nations, you had one big game on ESPN. You had one big game, I think, on ABC. And the numbers showed you where the eyeballs were. And so going forward, you make the point, you need those sports to keep the lights on. But man, I mean, are you going to have enough bulbs down the line?
That's a very good question. All right. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the scheduling coming up here for these NBA playoff games. So we're heading into the NBA playoffs now. And, you know, one of the things that really surprised me when I found out about it this week was that Golden State is going to open up the playoffs against Houston on TNT and not on ABC. So as anybody who follows me knows, Easter out-of-home viewing is a big factor in the ratings. You would expect the NBA to want to maximize its audience. And it was pretty inexplicable that the league put Oklahoma City against an unknown opponent as of yet in the 1 o'clock window and then Orlando-Boston in a later window. I can now shed a little bit of light as to why that seemingly inexplicable move was made. The NBA chose purposefully to put Oklahoma City on ABC this week in an effort to showcase the Thunder to a national audience. That was a purposeful decision by the league with the full knowledge that they were sacrificing viewership by doing so. That's still kind of, I mean, it's not something I would have done on Easter Sunday, given the out-of-home factor, but there was some rationale behind it. Again, I still think you got to find a way to get the Warriors in that 3:30 slot on ABC, but at least it's not completely inexplicable, the scheduling there.
I tell you what, though, this being Easter weekend, the numbers you could get with Golden State Houston in that 3:30 time slot, understanding what you've just reported, and great job by you, it's what sets you apart, my friend. But understanding what Easter weekend does in terms of out-of-home viewership, man, are you missing an opportunity right there to not have Golden State Houston in that slot? I know Minnesota LA is on Saturday night at 8:30. I get that. And I would imagine ESPN is really hoping for something big there. They've got Jay Billis doing that game. But, man, to not have a Golden State and a Houston matchup in that slot, you're missing an opportunity. But I get it. I get it. I know you want to showcase some of these up-and-coming teams, especially a team like Oklahoma City, who could very well be in the NBA Finals this year. I get that. But, ooh, you don't know how many more times you're going to get a Steph Curry and a LeBron James in the playoffs at the same time. And so we'll see what happens. The numbers will be what the numbers will be, but it is hard to imagine anything doing better in that 3:30 time slot than a Minnesota LA or Golden State.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the league is sacrificing viewership, right? I mean, they're open about that. And you know, it's something that I do kind of credit them for, because OKC is going to be around, right? So you might as well try to get the country acclimated to them. And they're not just going to be around this year, right? Not one, not two, not three. They could probably get away with saying that, okay? So I think the Thunder, if you can get people to be interested in them and used to them, fine. Now, I might have done that in the second week. I might have put game four on ABC, right? Easter Sunday out of home viewing, I still would put the Warriors there. But hey, look, the other side of it is, because it is Easter, those numbers are going to be elevated above what they normally would be. So you're looking at two games that would not ordinarily draw that well in whoever OKC plays, and then Boston, Orlando. Those two games are going to do way better than they would in any other time slot. And the Warriors are still going to attract a big audience, right? So you're not maximizing your audience, but you're going to get, I mean, I would be shocked if viewership was down for those two games, especially given last year. The numbers were not particularly good for that opening doubleheader this Sunday. So look, hey, I think, you know, it'll probably all work out. I mean, ultimately, once you lost the Warriors-Lakers series, you weren't going to maximize that Easter audience anyway. That was what you really wanted to put in that 3:30 window if you're the NBA.
Like you said, though, be honest about it. Be upfront about it and say, this is what we want to do. Doesn't mean it's the right thing to do or the wisest thing to do. The issue is the weekend, everything is falling on. That's the thing. If Easter were in late March, this is a different conversation. But given that boost that you're going to get from this weekend, boy, are you missing an opportunity right there to not have Golden State and Houston in that slot? But hey, if this is what the NBA wants to do, and they want to showcase these younger teams, they want to put these teams in the spotlight. The other thing that would have helped too, John, is if you got a younger team playing an established star-driven team. So if you get an Oklahoma City, but they're playing LeBron in the first round, that's different. As a matter of fact, years ago, Oklahoma City played the Lakers when Kobe was there. Like, you can use sort of the star power of the veteran to allow for this attention to be placed on these up-and-coming players. And then that's when people can say, oh, man, I was going to watch Kobe, but ooh, that Durant fella, that Westbrook fella, those guys are really good. They might win a championship in a couple of years. And so that's something else that you don't quite get in this same way in predicament we're talking about, because you don't get that LeBron versus Shea Gilgeous-Alexander type matchup. That would allow for SGA to rise to more prominence on the national scale, on the national level, because that series is not going to happen.
Technically, you kind of have it with, I mean, obviously, who's the young one and who's established? Because remember, Shea was in the bubble playing in the playoffs, you know, because I was going to say Shea versus Morant, but they're on the same level. But, you know, Morant was in the bubble, too. That was his rookie year. I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, if it's Memphis OKC, I think that could be a really good game. And, you know, maybe Orlando gives Boston a run for its money. Maybe you got Dallas in there with Anthony Davis and they, you know, kind of put a scare into OKC. Who knows? But we'll see. And before we move off the NBA, let's talk about the Billis assignment. This is an enormous assignment. this is the biggest game that Jay Billis has called in a long time. He does not get men's basketball games of consequence. ESPN doesn't have them, right? I mean, what, Duke, North Carolina? This is an NBA playoff game on ABC in prime time. Now, he actually did, I messed this up in my article. I did not remember he did a Christmas game for ABC. He's obviously, because he did a Christmas game, that's the biggest audience to listen to Jay Billis all year on basketball. This probably surpasses it, but certainly LeBron James, Anthony Edwards, I mean, it'll be Jay Billis sitting courtside. What do you think about his work on the NBA so far this year and what this kind of means?
Well, I think if you're, ESPN has a history of this, first of all. Back in the day, Bill Raftery did playoff games. People may not remember that. Len Elmore did playoff games back in the day as well. So there is some history here with this, with ESPN using, Fran Fraschilla did an NBA game or two years ago, if I recall, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. But ESPN does have some history of this. Also, Stephanie White is doing one of the playoff games this weekend with Michael Grady, if I'm not mistaken. So there is some history there. But for Jay Billis, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. Now, he does the Final Four, but for the international audience. But in America, yeah, this is the biggest thing I would say Jay has done in quite some time. But you know, you get a trusted analyst. You get the equivalent of Kirk Herbstreit doing a playoff game, doing the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game for Amazon this year. When you're good enough, you're good enough. And he's working, I think, with Mark Jones. These are two guys who've been at ESPN for 30 years, both respected names in broadcasting. The broadcast will be just fine and in fine hands. Billis has been strong with the NBA, and he was in contention for that that spot beside Mike Breen and Doris Burke before it eventually went to Richard Jefferson. So you're going to get a good broadcast. Billis is established at this point. He's one of the best analysts in sports, in my opinion, especially in basketball. And so the broadcast will be in good hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Billis and Tim Legler were contenders, and they're both doing ABC games this week. You know, last year they had Dave Pasch and Bob Myers on the Laker Saturday night game. I am not high on Bob Myers. I know that David Roberts, when he was running the show there, was high on Bob Myers. I am not high on Bob Myers. And so I'm glad that they went with this. To be completely honest, you know, I think Legler and or Billis would be a pretty good, you know, lead, and maybe even better than what they currently have, with all due respect to Doris Burke and Richard Jefferson. So, you know, I'm glad to see a big playoff game assignment there for Billis. We'll see how many more of those he gets this year. And we'll see. You know, ESPN's in a lot of flux with their NBA. They really have no set teams. Ryan Rucco, he was supposed to be the number two guy. He's clearly not the number two guy anymore. You know, I think Pasch kind of is. I would go with Michael Grady, maybe not this year or next year, but down the line, he's got a very high ceiling. Go ahead.
ESPN doesn't do something. There's something they could do and maybe even should do that NBC used to do, but ESPN doesn't do it. What am I talking about? During the playoffs, NBC would split Bill Walton and Steve Jones so that you had an analyst for another game. And then when the conference finals and those bigger games would come, they would bring Walton and Jones back together. Everybody knows Bill Walton and Steve Jones were always better together than they were apart. But for the playoffs, NBC would break them up so that you would have an extra game crew. And I would think ESPN would have at least been willing to put maybe Burke with Breen and Jefferson with somebody else so that you have enough bodies to cover all these games. They didn't do that. They want Burke and Jefferson to stay together, I guess, to continue building chemistry for the NBA finals so that they're as good as they can possibly be. But this is what happens, and I hate to go back to it, but this is what happens when you lose Hubie Brown, you lose J.J. Redick, and you cut Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. ESPN lost so much really strong commentary, solid to great broadcasters over the last couple of years, and this is what they've been left with. And a lot of it is their own doing. They did not have to let Van Gundy and Jackson go, and they're still feeling the results of that even to this day.
Even on the sidelines, they're in flux. I mean, obviously, Wednesday, Cassidy Hubbard's final game, he's moving on to Amazon. You know, Hubbard is an interesting case, really probably the first person I ever noticed in this industry who I felt was an aged peer when she was starting out on ESPN News. One of the things that was interesting to me was to watch how ESPN didn't do anything with her at all. And, you know, the journey from 25 to 40 is really fast in this industry. And if you have a network that's just kind of dithering, not willing to give you the opportunities when they come up, multiple times they could have put her in as a studio host, right? They could have avoided a lot of pain plugging in Cassidy Hubbard. I felt like she was already maybe kind of possibly good enough for that role when they gave it to Beadle, but she was still, you know, maybe not seasoned enough. But certainly when they got rid of Beadle, she would have been the direction I went in. Not as much as I like Rachel Nichols, I never thought it made sense for the jump to be the show. And Maria Taylor was obviously much more entrenched in college football, which, of course, is the point that Rachel made in that audio that was obtained surreptitiously of her. Why is Maria Taylor getting my job and not Reese Davis's job? But that's another story for another day. I definitely see with how they wasted Hubbard a little bit of what's going on with Laura Rutledge. Because again, like I said, that journey from 25 to 40 is quick. And in this industry, if you aren't fully established by then, you are set back. So if you are not getting the maximal opportunity, when you have the ability to do Good Morning America, maybe even, Cassidy Hubbard, ESPN never gave her any assignment of magnitude, and Amazon immediately made her their number one. So I look at Rutledge and I say, there's going to be a network that wants her to be their number one sideline reporter on Super Bowls. So ESPN better start doing something on that front.
Well, ESPN is hoping they can keep Laura long enough for their first Super Bowl, because I would imagine that they're going to want Lisa Salters and Laura Rutledge to be their two sideline reporters when they get the Super Bowl in February 2027. So if Laura stays there long enough and is still willing to sort of take maybe some B-level assignments in the meantime, then that's what you would get. But I do agree with you. I think Cassidy's going to be great for Amazon. They used to do this thing called Coast to Coast a while back on like ESPN2.
The whip around show.
Yeah. She hosted that for a while, but it wasn't anything earth shattering or career making. And as a result, she's just sort of been swirling for a while, for years now. And she's always been good on TV. I think she did the studio updates for college football for a little while, but nothing really of prominence for her. So good for her for getting this opportunity, but it's another loss for ESPN. In this new contract, they've got to really figure some things out. ESPN has to decide what they're going to do with their NBA coverage. They've got Inside the NBA, which was a great thing for them. It's far better than anything they have now in terms of studio content and studio programming. They've got to get these booths figured out. I mean, what is your number one team going to be? What is your number two team going to be? Who are the trusted analysts, the trusted voices, the respected voices, not just the ones who make noise? Who are your trusted, respected voices who can carry your coverage for a sport? Because what they have now is lacking, and it should be better for a network that's airing the finals.
You know, the Inside is kicking the can down the road, as we all know. And Charles Barkley was on the Jimmy Trainor podcast this week and said, he does, 2 to 3 years. Don't take Charles Barkley seriously when he says anything about his future. But let's just say that it is 2 to 3 years. That's a quick turnaround for having to figure out this studio problem. Malika Andrews basically is getting demoted, right? She's going to be doing the finals this year, and then next year, if she does the finals at all, it'll probably be like a secondary desk, like they used to do when they'd have Gumbel and Ernie Johnson on the tournament. You know, I mean, maybe they lose her too. I mean, I don't see any reason why she would be overwhelmingly loyal there.
Ernie will be 70, I think, next year. Ernie Johnson is 68 years old. His birthday's in August. Ernie turns 70 next year. That's something to think about. It doesn't seem like it because he's been so sharp for so long. But Shaq is in his 50s. Kenny is 60. Chuck is in his 60s. Mike Breen is in his 60s. These broadcasters are getting older right before our eyes. And there are going to have to be some broadcasters behind them to carry the coverage forward, because you're always looking behind you. You're always looking at who's next. Eventually, Carson's got to give way to Leno and Letterman. And so that's how the TV game works. So where are these, where's this next crop of great broadcasters, play-by-play people and analysts, where are they going to come from?
And if there's anyone who could replace Ernie Johnson, there's one person. I mean, no one can replace Ernie Johnson, but there's one person who I think Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck would respect and who could hold it down virtually seamlessly, and that is Scott Van Pelt. Now, in my mind, Scott Van Pelt is the cool new guy on SportsCenter who uses, you know, Aqua Teen Hunger Force lyrics in his highlights. But in reality, he is nearly 60 years old. He is closer in age to Ernie than we think. So that would not that there's any long-term aspects to this, but obviously by the time, let's say, Ernie were to step down in 2 years, you know, Scott is 60 at that point as well.
I can't help but think about this. You've got the NFL has all this great young television talent. Burleson and Ryan and Watt and Olsen and even Brady is still south of 50, right? I mean, you've got all this young Kevin Burkhardt, if he is 50, he just turned 50. So like these young broadcasters in the NFL who are coming up and getting Jason McCourty and taking prominent spots, number two analyst here, lead analyst there. And then you've got the NBA and it's like, where is everybody? Like, where are the top guys? Jefferson is younger, but that booth is not firm, right? We don't know what's going to happen with Breen, Burke, and Jefferson going forward. So, I mean, the NBA's got to, these television partners have got to figure some things out here. And really, you need, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast, but you need some of, at least one of these coaches to get back into broadcasting and sharpen things up a bit, a Doc Rivers or a Steve Kerr. But these guys are in it to win it. They are devoted. Doc left after 5 minutes with Doris Burke and Mike Breen. So where do the networks turn here to get quality broadcasters? It remains to be seen.
Yeah. And, you know, the Doris Burke issue, obviously a lot of people have a problem with her because she's a woman. Let's just be real. But she's also, you know, I've said this like a million times in multiple iterations of the podcast that I feel like Doris kind of went off the track. Like someone gave her the wrong advice. And so she went from being a really great analyst on breaking down games and breaking down plays to maybe a little bit too much of the narrative, too much of the kind of stuff they talk about on ESPN studio shows. And so also I honestly feel when I listen to her talk that she is not fully comfortable in the role. And I never felt that way at the start of her career. But I feel like ever since, I've said it before, so people have probably heard me say this, ever since Drake wore that jersey or that shirt with her face on it, I feel like it honestly tipped the attention over into a place that made her more self-conscious. And that also corresponds with a lot of this kind of shift from X's and O's to, you know, opining.
It didn't help either that Reddick, Burke, Brain Crew was not very good together. They were not great together. Reddick's an interesting one. And I think Doris Burke even said to front office either this week or last that Richard Jefferson is more of a pure broadcaster than Reddick was. And I think it shows. I think Reddick's presence, I won't say he's a negative Norman, I won't go that far, but it's more of the analytical piece, the sort of data-driven piece. And I think it takes away from the chemistry they could have had, took away. That Breen Burke-Reddick booth was not very good. And I think you could tell that. ESPN was at its best from an NBA standpoint when Burke was on the sidelines. Not to say that that's where she has to be because she's a woman. That's not my point. I'm saying ESPN was at its best when Burke was on the sidelines and Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson was your lead crew. And for them to not have that, even Lisa Salters, either Burke or Salters is fine, but I'm talking specifically about Doris Burke. Doris was doing the trophy presentation. She was excellent at that. I thought Doris was really great with the trophy presentations when she was doing sideline reporting. But ESPN was at its best as an NBA partner when Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson was your booth and Doris Burke was on the sidelines.
I mean, yeah. I mean, beyond anything else, just muscle memory, right? And, you know, trading that in for instability is not a great idea. If you have stability, hold on to it. It's a wonderful thing to have. And yes, yeah, stability can become stagnancy relatively quickly. And you have to be aware of that, like CBS was with Nance and Sims. But in general, if you've got something that works and it still works all these years later, the new models probably aren't built quite as well, are they?
That is so, so true. And it sort of ties back to our conversation about College Game Day, because, yes, even when it wasn't as fresh a show, there was still a comfort level with College Game Day, with a declining Corso, Herb Street, even David Pollack. David Pollack didn't bother me at all on that show. And I do feel he got a bit of a raw deal. But change for change's sake is not always a good thing. And sometimes, I mean, look at Inside the NBA. People forget those guys have been together going on 15 years now. And Kenny Shaq and Ernie have been together for 25 years. So, of course, it's going to be better. Of course, there's going to be a chemistry because you stuck it out. And keep in mind, Shaq was dreadful when they started together. He was dreadful. But you hang in there. And you show a confidence and a belief in your talent, and you let them grow together, and now you get what you've gotten, a truly iconic cast, even despite the fact that the show is not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, look, the reality of the matter is it's not easy to create chemistry on the fly. If you have it, treasure it. And Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson, they had chemistry. As irritating as those digressions could be, they had chemistry. And certainly, as you mentioned, Reddick is not someone who can have chemistry. His personality doesn't, I mean, maybe with LeBron, but like certainly not in the broadcast booth, frankly, not even with Rucco and Jefferson when they were trying to make that the number two.
It worked better with Rucco and Jefferson because Jefferson could sort of play the Walton type character. Jefferson could be the loose cannon. He could throw the curveball at Reddick, who maybe wanted to be a little bit more straight-laced and a little bit more X's and O's focused. At least it had a better chance of working there. But with Breen and Burke, first of all, there was an age gap, a generation gap. And I think just a style difference, a stylistic difference that made for a decent broadcasting experience, but nothing great.
Yeah, yeah. I think had Doc Rivers not, you know, done what he did and left them high and dry, maybe that might have worked out. I mean, Doc is that good. And certainly Doc had great chemistry with Mike Breen just in a handful of episodes. All right. So we're going to shift gears now, of course, to the greatest final round of the Masters in, well, honestly, in like 6 years, because obviously Tiger won in 2019. And talk a little bit about this great Rory McIlroy miracle where he overcame, himself to win the green jacket in a playoff. You know, a lot of people were gushing about the Masters. It was an excellent broadcast. And it was a rare, you know, it's kind of weird that golf could give you a feel-good story. Because here's a, you know, golf is one of those sports, but it genuinely was a feel-good story with Rory McIlroy overcoming all of those adversities that he created for himself. Those are the worst adversities, so once you create for yourself. To see him overcome them like that was really nice. It was a good thing. But for all the praise that CBS rightfully gets, you know, the Masters and Augusta National controlling its image the way that it does, it's a big reason for that. Every other property in sports TV gives up the right to control its image in exchange for money. And Augusta National doesn't do that. Now, there's a lot wrong with Augusta National historically, let's be clear. And the control that they have is not always a good thing. But as far as the aesthetics, just talking about the broadcast itself, I think that is, if you want to watch a sport the way it is meant to be covered, probably helps if the people running it have extreme control over the broadcaster the way that Augusta National does. And, you know, it's an interesting trade. You're trading objectivity. You're trading maybe something closer to journalistic standards for this tightly controlled public relations broadcast, basically. But it's also, as a fan, a far better watch. This was one of the better sports broadcasts that I've seen. You weren't distracted by anything. You only focused on the story, and the story was compelling. I mentioned in my article this week, you did not have the stars from Tracker in the gallery, right? And CBS says, oh, well, hey, look who's here. Watch Tracker later tonight. None of that stuff. Hardly any commercials. Hardly any graphics. Oh, my goodness. Isn't it such a beautiful thing to just see the sport and not a million graphics on the screen? And look, Fox did minimalism during the Super Bowl in the showiest possible way. I'm talking true minimalism with these graphics. It's notable to me that one of the best sports broadcasts we've seen, a broadcast that, you know, CBS was nominated last week for a sports Emmy for last year's Masters. They will win the sports Emmy next year for this year's Masters. And so one of the best sports broadcasts we've seen in a while, a lot of it has to do with Augusta National exerting control. I mean, what does that mean for anybody else? It's not something that any other league other than the NFL could possibly duplicate. The NFL can because its ratings are so good. They can control just about anything. But, you know, leagues kind of, they give up that control for billions of rights fees.
Well, remember too, speaking of the NFL, remember how crappy a schedule Monday Night Football was getting because the NFL was not happy with a lot of the journalistic reporting of the uglier side of the league. And when a lot of that started to subside and go away, here comes Philadelphia, Kansas City on Monday Night Football versus Jacksonville, New Orleans, which was a lot more in line with what ESPN had been getting from Monday Night Football for quite some time. But you're right, John, 35% increase from last year for the Masters. And what I love about it was, now, I told somebody this. Let me back up. I told somebody it's manufactured reverence. And so it feels over the top, but you know what? It works. That's the thing. It works. From the weather to the hushed, reverent tones, no announcer. I'm going to make this statement. No announcer in history fits a single event or sport like Jim Nance does the Masters. McIlroy has his masterpiece. I'm sure he had that in his mind or written down somewhere for minutes, maybe even hours, maybe even days, but it works. It's manufactured. Yes, heavily produced. Yes, you couldn't even talk about the impact to the course from Hurricane Helene. The Masters made sure CBS did not bring those things up. And so, yes, there are these problems, but man, it feels weird to use the word purity because it's not pure. It's so produced and controlled, but it comes across on television like this near perfect television product. And so not only that, but you're able to follow the drama. We've talked about this before. Sports is at its best when you're almost able to take a look into the soul of these athletes. And my goodness, the shots you got of Rory McIlroy collapsing, the tears, the unbridled joy at finally being able to get this monkey off his back. All of those things are why we watch sports. Not for the graphics, not for the hot takes, not for the fat that all the fat that really needs to be trimmed off the product to get something like that, as manufactured as it is. And I want to make that point very clear. It is, the Masters has total control from the prices of the menu items to what you call the fans. They're not fans, they're patrons, to the no cell phone policy, to all of those things. But they work hard at it. But man, do you get a really enjoyable television product. And you got it again, and you got a great story with Rory McIlroy, and you at its peak, you got almost 20 million people watching in that 7 to 7:15-ish window. It was great theater. That's why you watch sports.
You know, we live in a very acerbic, sarcastic era, and we have for a long time. It's been very bipartisan. We're getting a lot of that right now from the right, but if you go back from the last 15 years, you got a lot of it from the left, too. A lot of this kind of, you know, very much looking down on sincerity. So how sincere is the Masters? We know a lot of it is enforced. It's sincere from Nance. Nance is a very sincere guy. That makes him someone who people make fun of, might enjoy sometimes. I remember when he had his divorce, it seemed like people enjoyed that, right? If you remember, got some of the coverage of that, people seem to get a kick out of a dark point in his life. And look, let's be real. It's not cool to be genuine. But it works so perfectly because everything at the Masters is contrived, but they all really believe in it. And so that's kind of the key. Anything can be contrived if people really commit. Any media product, no matter what the quality is, works if the people truly believe in it, right? If they sincerely are trying to make the best product that they can. And so something that might ordinarily be cloying, might ordinarily make you roll your eyes, works. And where is anything else in sports that can match the sincerity that CBS carries this event with? Nothing else in sports that can match it. You know, there's no other event where the reverence comes off as something that is truly felt. Like all the ESPN people, you could feel Laura Rutledge and everybody else just almost kind of walking on, I wouldn't say eggshells, but like it's a career highlight. You can tell just watching, it's a career highlight for them. There's nothing else like that, you know? So, yeah, okay. It's all kind of mandatory. It's mandatory sincerity. But it still works because I do believe they all actually feel it.
Yeah, it's almost like anything can become real if you believe it enough. I think it was Pat Summerall who, when they used to do the walk up 18, he would say, "I cry every time." And I know some people say, man, that seems so inauthentic and fake. But you know what? If you believe in it, if you commit to it, like you said, John, it works. And granted, like we said, the Masters has a heavy hand when it comes to how they want this thing to be produced and presented. But doggone it, it's a great television product. And for as many issues as there are behind the scenes historically, when the weekend comes, and you had Vern at 16, and you got Nance in Butler Cabin, and you've got all these other really talented broadcasters, and this well-oiled machine, Stellar Shy is at the helm doing the producing, and these committed men and women put this broadcast together every year, it works. And then you're able to, golf is so unique because it's so individualized. And so it becomes not just about who's going to win, but it becomes about Rory's glory story. And it becomes about overcoming. The Tiger win in 2019, one of the most incredible stories in sports, in my opinion, ever told. Because we were looking, we were dissecting this man in real time. And this is one of the things that Nance is so good at. And it helps him in golf, but it hurts him in other sports. He's so good at just knowing the history of a man, his life, because all of that comes into play in golf. No sport exposes you. You're not as naked in any sport as you are in golf. And Nance is so good at being able to speak to the whole of a man, the whole of a golfer. And he did that on Sunday, especially with Rory McIlroy. And then the pictures were there to illustrate that and to add to it and adorn it. And it was great television. It was.
The other thing, too, about the Masters, the gentility, Southern gentility, you know, I cast a side glance at that just based on the history. But the reality is we live in a very crass society. Everybody is Roseanne singing the national anthem now. That gentility, however much to put on it is attractive. It's just basic class on television in 2025 for a national audience. That is also something, fake as it may be, that is worthwhile.
You know, the other thing I'm thinking about is, because Rory had some peaks, and boy, did he have some valleys. And I'm thinking about, like, it's so important how you frame that in real time. And one of the things that I come away with golf especially, the players are not torn down the way other athletes are in other sports by the announcers, I mean.
Don't forget Brandel Chamblee exists.
Oh, yeah. But he's not on the Masters coverage. Right. Like during the broadcast, because let's face it, there are other arguments that are made in other sports about these athletes in real time that take away from the humanity is what I'm trying to say. But you're right about Brandel Chamblee. That's he's in a category, a different category. We won't see him on Masters coverage anytime soon, I don't think. If he is, it'd be a surprise to me. But there is something about humanizing these players in a way that allows us to appreciate their story. I mean, my goodness, watching this man and thinking about this quest and then thinking about how high his highs were and how low his lows were. Sunday, golf was an example, an illustration of a human story. And when sports storytelling is at its best, that's what you get. And that's what you got on Sunday.
Yeah, it's not cool, you know, but hey, 12.99 million viewers watched that for 5 hours. So I know it's not great TikTok content. It's not great cable news content. But there were 13 million people in this country who sat down for 5 hours and watched it. And at the peak, nearly 20 million did. So there's an audience for something that isn't crass. There is an audience for something that is sincere. Yeah, I guess that'll do it for this week. Thank you, as always, to Armand for joining me. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more stuff next week.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.